Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everybody out there, how are we feeling this week? We are here on Between the Tackles. I am your host, Hogan. This is episode 50. This is crazy that we've made it to almost halfway to a century at this point. That is crazy that we've had 50 weeks to sit around and talk football and do crazy things. And we got more crazy things to talk about. Unfortunately, Burgess is not available today. He's out slumming it per usual, but I got my other guy here, my rock, my dude, Manish. How we doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, Hogan. How you doing? You ready for, are you flying out to Germany to watch the Pats this week?
Absolutely not. No, I would never, ever, ever in my life waste that kind of money to go and watch the most abysmal thing I've ever seen in my life with that. And actually, I think the Germany game next week, isn't that the Giants and Carolina Panthers? Isn't that like going to be the worst matchup of all time that we could give to the international folks out there? I feel so bad for those guys. So I think the NFL purposely just takes a look at the schedule and is like, you know what? Let's find the biggest dumpster fire matchup we can and just send it over to those guys. And they're just like, this is football, enjoy it. And it's like, that's the worst that you could ever do to those people over there. You've never gone international for a game, have you?
I have. I went to London to watch the Jets play the Dolphins back in 2018-17. You know what? Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback, so whenever that was.
Oh, so back when the Jets were somewhat competent. No, I'm kidding. We're going to get to them. Don't you worry. We got a whole bunch of competency to talk about with those guys there. But yeah, we're going to get right into it with the Patriots versus the Jets this past weekend. That was an absolute crazy matchup that we have to talk about, obviously, with us being myself and Burgess being Pat's homers here on Between the Tackles, where I looked at this matchup as the Jets were favored. I believe it was by 7 points, if I'm not mistaken, coming into Foxborough, and obviously the big hoopla with everything, Devontae Adams getting traded to the Jets and Robert Saleh no longer being the head coach, and all the pieces seem to be lined up for, you know, Jets to roll in and take care of business, especially with Drake May exiting the game the way he did early in the first quarter, which is really unfortunate to see because he was off to such a promising start with the rushing ability he was showing, where he ran for the long touchdown. However, Jacoby Brissett came in relief and shocked, I think, everybody, including Patriots Nation, with what he was able to do by leading the Patriots from behind at the end, game-winning drive. It was wild to see. A couple seconds left with Ramondre Stevenson able to jump into the end zone there and play spoiler to the New York Jets. Manish, I got to get your thoughts on this game. Were you able to watch it, and what jumped out to you the most in this?
Yeah, it was. And initially what jumped out was just how formidable I thought the Patriots would be after Drake May scored early. You know, obviously his athleticism was going to play a role. The Jets have had some issues with athletic quarterbacks this season. So I figured, coming in, I thought a 7-point line was way too much, even though a few weeks earlier, as you know, the Patriots really dismantled New England on a Thursday night, I think, in Jersey. I still thought, with the way the Jets have been playing, road game, a touchdown line was probably larger than it should have been. And I think that just kind of, I felt emboldened after the Drake May touchdown. But then when he got hurt, I figured that's it. It's over. Who knows how this game would unfold. But ultimately, I figured the Jets would win. I actually thought the Jets would take control in the second half, kind of pull away. But as it is the case in most NFL games, when you have a team that probably is the clear better team, if they let the inferior team hang around long enough, it could come back and bite you. But I was really impressed, whatever you want to call it, about that 12-play touchdown drive in the last couple minutes. I think the story of the day for the Patriots offensively was just how successful and really shocking they were on third downs. They were 7-for-15 for the game, but they had those two key third downs in that game-winning drive where they had the 3rd-and-9 scramble. Brissett goes for 14, obviously a huge play. And that 3rd-and-10 where Booty just spun Sauce Gardner around like a top and got them inside the 10. And then even though they didn't convert on their third down of the drive, they got him inside the 1 before Stevenson, finished off the drive. But just one clutch play after another, certainly not something you would think from this Patriots team, and certainly not with Jacoby Brissett under center. If anything, you would have expected that from Drake May. You may be using his legs kind of in a scramble drill, in crunch time. But to have Brissett do this when you know, haven't seen it all season, needing a touchdown, 2 minutes to go against a good defense. You know, I think probably an inflated defense, not as good as some people might think, but still a solid defense. And the march down the field in 2.5 minutes for the game winning drive was certainly, you know, that would be considered, even though they won week one against the Bengals on the road, I would say that, you know, that drive is clearly the highlight of this season so far.
No, for sure. That was crazy to see that the Patriots were able to pull that off. And the big thing that really jumped out to me, you touched on where the Patriots had took advantage of the New York Jets defense there. The big thing that jumped out to me, especially in the first half, was the Jets' ability to run the football, where they did extremely well in the first half. And Breece Hall, I think, had like 80 yards on 16 carries. He averaged rushing the ball, the Jets overall average, I believe it was like 5 yards a carry, if not maybe a little bit less than that. And they completely abandoned that, especially when they were still within the game. They weren't up massive or anything, but just, is this another example of coaches shooting themselves in the foot, overthinking things, and just trying to play hero ball with Aaron Rodgers there in New York? Where if you look at what Jacksonville did against this Patriots defense over in London, they ran the ball 17, 18 straight times right down this Patriots defense throat. The Jets had the same success to an extent going into this game, and then they just decided, hey, let's throw the ball a bunch of times and essentially lose this game. Are coaches just out of their minds at this point, or am I seeing this in a different view as from somebody else?
Well, there's always a caveat with any Aaron Rodgers team. We don't actually know what the original play call was, because Rodgers does have autonomy to change the play call as he sees fit at the line of scrimmage. So it's hard to know if Todd Downing's calls were adhered to 100% of the time. Obviously, it's not 100%, but like, did Rodgers audible change things, 50% of the time, 75% of the time? It's really hard to definitively know unless you're Rodgers or Downing. But I agree with you. You know, they had a lot of success running the ball in the first half, which is a departure from what the Jets had done for much of the season, because Breece Hall, even with that solid game last week, is still averaging under 4 yards a carry for the season. But he had really struggled in the previous, you know, month or so. And that offensive line had difficulty opening holes for him. So, yeah, the fact that he had been so successful in the first half, it is curious why they didn't keep going to that well, because it was a tight game, nip and tuck game all four quarters. It wasn't like the Jets were trailing by multiple scores and had to abandon the run. So, you know, my gut feeling, again, I don't know this definitively, but my gut feeling is that, you know, a lot of those play calls, at least half, were adjusted by Aaron Rodgers. It's just because, you know, they give him the freedom to do that because of his experience, his knowledge of reading defenses pre-snap. So clearly it backfired. The element of this game that I thought was funny, and a lot of teams or a lot of, you know, fans are kind of picking on the Jets about, the three timeouts in the first quarter. You know, how often do you see that? You don't see it very often. You know, I think, though, either last week or the week before, the Vikings actually called three timeouts in a first quarter. So, yeah, it's highly unusual, but it actually has happened recently. And the other play call that really came under scrutiny and opened the door for, you know, a lot of people poking fun at the Jets is, how could the Jets, after taking that 5-point lead late in the game, how could they get a delay of game penalty on the 2-point conversion, which obviously was critical in order to get up by a full touchdown? And they ultimately failed because they got pushed back 5 yards, and it was from the 7 instead of the 2. I think for whatever reason, people kind of either didn't know about this, or it kind of got, lost in all the other clutter. But Aaron Rodgers did say after the game that the play call that they had in mind, they had a quick play call in mind, was not conducive to what he saw the Patriots on defense, what alignment he saw. So he was okay with getting the delay of game and pushing it back to the 7, because he felt like the play call that they had was going to work fine. It's just in that particular defense that he saw in front of him pre-snap, it wasn't going to work. So that was actually on Aaron Rodgers. I know the coaching staff gets a lot of, you know, blame and criticism for that. And how could that happen? Well, how can you not have a play called? Because you know that entire drive, if you score a touchdown and go up by 5, you're going for 2. So why was there a delay? There actually wasn't a delay. It was just that Rodgers made an executive decision when he got to the line and said that, hey, you know, where we are on the field, 2 yards out, and what I see in front of me in terms of what the defensive alignment is, this isn't going to work. So he was perfectly fine, taking the delay of game. And as he said after the game, that ultimately was an incorrect decision by him, because, you know, they didn't convert after the 5-yard penalty.
No, for sure. I think the interesting part is that he can sit there and he can defend the 2-point conversion like that. But if you look back to that first quarter, like you touched upon, all the timeouts they had to use because there were multiple times where the play clock was running down. And it seems to be a common theme with the Jets and, you know, a couple other teams out there, like you mentioned. And all things considered, don't worry. Aaron Rodgers came out and said that he's got the fountain of youth from Thomas Morstead or something. Now, at this point, I feel like we just rip on Aaron Rodgers every week on this podcast. So we're going to move on from him and his shenanigans at this point. And we're going to kind of change subject here to go to the younger side of things, especially where I want to talk about Drake May and really how, you know, like we touched on with Brissett coming in and leading the group, which was really great to see because Brissett had taken so much of a beating earlier this year. Well-deserved because of a lot of the games the Patriots failed in early on in the season, and Drake May kind of brought that spark to the Patriots offense that it desperately needed the last couple of weeks. So seeing him get hurt was really unfortunate. Whether he's going to be able to go sooner or later, we'll find out because I believe he's still in concussion protocol. But we're going to piggyback off of that young quarterback, and we're going to go to another one that the news broke recently that he's getting benched as of right now. And of course, I'm talking about Anthony Richardson for the Indianapolis Colts. This is a really, really strange situation. I don't think I've ever seen it in the NFL where a guy is taken as high as Anthony Richardson was in the draft for him to, you know, have all the hope and promise in the world, get injured his first year. And obviously a lot of people were wowed by what he was able to do in the short amount of time before he got injured. And then this year, again, that hope and that optimism was there for Indianapolis. And at times he's making ridiculous throws 70 yards off his back foot and doing crazy things. And then of course he's getting ripped on possibly more than the Jets are at this point because of his comments post game with the whole, oh, I took myself out of the game because I was tired. And just as a former football player, I mean, like you said, like a lot of offensive linemen are coming out and saying, are you effing kidding me, dude? Like, we're 300 pounds over here. We're running up and down the field and you're bitching about running a couple plays and you got to pull yourself out. I think personally, it's not a sustained good thing going forward, but I think the Colts are making the right choice here by going with Joe Flacco. Manish, what are your thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, I actually think it's the right decision too, for a number of reasons. One, the Colts have not made the playoffs in the past three seasons, so they don't want to go on a 4-year drought. The head coach, Shane Steichen, is in his second season. So last year, you draft a quarterback, gets injured first. There's no pressure, you know, on them making the playoffs. Rookie quarterback, rookie head coach. And then Gardner Minshew leads into a winning record. You know, they were 9-8. So you could see what was around the quarterback and what this team could be. And, you know, they're treading water right now with Anthony Richardson. But you saw in the time that he was out just how productive the offense specifically could be with Joe Flacco. You know, in many ways, it's kind of like what we saw in Cleveland. Like Joe Flacco just, you know, can show an organization that, hey, you know what? The pieces that we have in place are the right pieces if you have a competent quarterback, a guy that can get the ball to Josh Downs, Michael Pittman, not to even mention Jonathan Taylor, who had been hurt himself for a couple games. So they have a lot of good skill position players. Anthony Richardson just wasn't getting it done. Now, what's fascinating to me is just what quarterback development has become in the NFL. There's really no time for it. You know, if you just look at Anthony Richardson's draft class, the number one pick was Bryce Young. He was already benched. Now he's back because Andy Dalton got hurt, but he was benched in his second season. I think the outlier might be C.J. Stroud. And I think if you're being honest, C.J. Stroud, while the Texans have been good this year from a record standpoint, hasn't been as good as he was as a rookie. Now, you know, we're about halfway through, but let's see how the second half of the season comes around. But he's had some warts in his game, and, you know, he's had some injuries around him, albeit. But, you know, if you look at some of the younger quarterbacks, it doesn't hold true for everybody because, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule. You're seeing some of that with Jaden Daniels and even Caleb Williams coming around now in the rookie season. But, you know, the standard bearer of the last several years has been, you know, Patrick Mahomes, who didn't even play as a rookie. And then he hit the ground running in year two. Another guy who's played exceptionally well after, you know, biding his time for several years is Jordan Love. That's another guy who wasn't rushed into the fire because of circumstances and having Aaron Rodgers in front of me. I just think there's so much pressure on quarterbacks to develop quickly or they will be lost, you know, forever. It's not like it was, I hate going back 50 years, but I'll go back 50 years. You know, in the 70s, when Terry Bradshaw, was a top pick, he started, and then he sucked, and they benched him for a while before he got his footing, and obviously, was at the engine of a dynasty in Pittsburgh. So there's just not that much time. There's not that much patience. It's a society that we live in. And again, when you look at the bigger picture with the Colts, they themselves are in a 3-year playoff drought. I don't think they want to extend that another year. And they look at Joe Flacco as possibly an avenue to breaking that slide. And Shane Steichen certainly doesn't want to go two consecutive seasons without, having that much success. He wants to make the playoffs. So that's why I think Flacco makes sense. Are they shutting the door on Anthony Richardson? I don't think so. He's got so much talent. Obviously, Joe Flacco is not any kind of long-term answer beyond 2024. But Richardson has all the requisite tools. The big, red flag, I would say, with him versus a guy like Drake May. I mean, Drake May is a guy who played 30 games in college. You completed about 66% of his passes in college, over 65 touchdown passes, maybe under 15 interceptions. He had a successful college career by every objective measure. Whereas if you look at Richardson, I think he only started about 24 games, I want to say. 23 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. He was never really an accurate passer in college. I think he was about 55% completion percentage. And if you look at him now, he's horrific. He's about 44%. That's not going to get it done in the NFL. But, he's a guy who was raw coming in. And because of his athletic skills, and as you said, Hogan, the ability to really have a rocket arm, I think in week one against the Texans, he threw the ball like 65, 70 yards in the air to Alec Pierce. And, that got a lot of oohs and ahs from people. He's got those gifts, but, that's the stuff that people talk about. The stuff that people don't talk about is your ability to process information, your mental acuity, your mental maturity, your inner resilience. Those are things you cannot really measure at the combine or that you can't really see on tape. And I'm not saying that Anthony Richardson can't develop that processing ability, but he's so far off right now, he's not even close to being able to mentally play the game at a high level. And right now, it's not time to, have him learn on the job. It's, as you would hope in a perfect world, he would get. Because, again, larger picture, GM has been there for a while. Team hasn't made the playoffs for a while. They've got a guy who has proven that he can win games at this level. And that's why they made the decision. Frankly, I don't think it's the end of Anthony Richardson, but I do think it was the right decision to have Joe Flacco start right now for them.
For sure. I know one thing that you were talking about is like a guy who can throw the ball a mile, brings up Jamarcus Russell. And in no way am I comparing Anthony Richardson to Jamarcus Russell, but it's interesting where you brought up the fact of there's such a limited amount of time for success in the NFL for both. You think about it, quarterbacks and head coaches, depending on the situation that they're in. I go back to the Arizona Cardinals, even a few years ago, where they took Josh Rosen as high as they did in the draft. The plug was pulled on him less than a year because Kyler Murray dropped into their laps where they had the number one pick overall the next year. And Rosen was done after less than a full year as their starter. So it's very, very interesting where coaches and GMs and owners believe their team is at this point where they're just willing to move on as fast as possible because they think success just happens overnight, which it clearly does not in the NFL of all teams. I mean, franchises and everything, but just, we're going to piggyback off of what you were talking about with CJ Stroud specifically, where he's had some injuries, and we're going to get into some news, whether it's trades or injuries, and we're going to discuss this a little bit. And the biggest one for injuries that I think came out of last week, Nico Collins already went down and is on IR. Granted, he's on, I believe, the designated return IR, where he should be available within the next few weeks or so. Stephon Diggs, though, torn ACL, out for the year. Does this damage the Houston Texans' chances at winning a Super Bowl or making a deep playoff run this year?
I mean, I think it has a tangible impact for sure. I mean, we'll see how Nico Collins looks when he comes back. It's a hamstring injury. You got to be careful. He'll have missed 4 weeks, a month or so. So you would hope that's sufficient time to heal, but every hamstring is different. They certainly can't afford a re-injury, on that end. The other element of it is that Tank Dell really has to play much better than he has to this point. I mean, here's a guy who flashed some dynamic play last year, and, then he broke his ankle on a weird play, like a goal line run, I think. And then I think he got shot in the off season. I mean, he's had a rough, several months, but he's a much better player than he showed to this point. frankly, I'm surprised that he hasn't been nearly as productive as I thought he would after Collins went down. Even when they had Diggs, I thought that Diggs and Tank Dell would kind of share the load, but Dell hasn't really done much. He's been a non-factor. I mean, now there's really no choice, at least for Thursday night against the Jets. He's their main guy. They've got Xavier Hutchinson, Robert Woods. Obviously, they'll lean on Dalton Schultz a little bit more. You're probably going to see a little bit more, a little heavier workload for Joe Mixon as well. Even John Mechie, who was a high draft pick for them. I mean, those guys will have some kind of role, but Tank Dell really needs to take a significant step up from what he has done to this point. So, yeah, does it hurt their chances? Yeah, I think it'll hurt their chances. And Stephon Diggs is a professional receiver, a guy who has had a good amount of success this year. Not the dynamic player that he was statistically, at least in Buffalo, but clearly an important piece to the puzzle. And I know we'll talk about this later, but even though the Texans are 6-2, I think there's a reason why they're underdogs on Thursday night against a 2-win Jet team.
For sure, it's certainly interesting in the slightest. But I'm looking at now the trades that actually happened this past week, and a couple of ones that jumped out to me were Cam Robinson, the tackle down there in Jacksonville, got shipped up to the Vikings. Where I'm looking at this situation, where is Jacksonville kind of just conceding the season at this point? Where Trevor Lawrence obviously has done what he could to try and get that team turned around, but they are not firing on all cylinders. And on the flip side, for the Vikings, are they making a push now? Because they started off the season as well as they did, and obviously their left tackle went down there and they needed some assurance for Sam Darnold and everything like that. This kind of tells a tale of two different teams and the directions they're going, where it seems like Jacksonville's packing it in and Minnesota's trying to make that run right now, especially in the season where a lot of people thought they'd be rebuilding. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was a smart move by the Vikings, without a doubt. You lose Christian Darrisaw, and they lost him in the worst way. It was like a throwaway a rushing attempt at the end of the first half. Really didn't need to happen. I mean, I know things like that happen, but obviously we saw Chris Godwin go down in similar fashion and, late in the game that was out of reach. But yeah, getting Cam Robinson is a clear indication that they believe this is a win now window. And why wouldn't you, based on, the record, based on the way that Sam Darnold has played, they are actually in the weirdest sort of window, because they've got a formidable team, clearly a Super Bowl contending team, a team that can clearly win the NFC, even though they just lost to the Lions. And they also have a quarterback who's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. Really a guy who's supposed to be a stopgap in Sam Darnold. They drafted McCarthy, who is out for the season before the season even begins. He's a high draft choice. They believe, I think, that he's still the future. But if you're Sam Darnold and you take the Vikings to, let's say, the NFC Championship game, or let's say the Super Bowl, if you're the Vikings, do you really let Sam Darnold walk? It's kind of like what we saw for a few years when the Niners were going deep into the playoffs and the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. And the question every year after the season was, well, are they going to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo? And, Garoppolo supporters would say, well, I mean, he just led you, deep into the playoffs, or he just led you to the Super Bowl. How can you move on from him? It'll be fascinating to see. I know we're jumping a few months ahead, but it'll be fascinating to see if the Vikings do indeed make a deep playoff run on the backs of Sam Darnold's career year, because let's face it, that's what he's having right now. Would they actually let him walk in free agency and turn the keys over to J.J. McCarthy? I would assume that a guy like Justin Jefferson wouldn't be happy about that. Or do they pony up money, because someone's going to pony up money for Sam Darnold in the offseason. As far as the Jags go, yeah, look, they're a 2-win team. I don't think they're in fire sale mode, but they got a couple, they got a late third-day draft pick for Robinson. I'll be curious to see before Tuesday's trade deadline if they make any other moves of significance. I don't think they will, but we'll see. I mean, if they get blown out against the Eagles this weekend, maybe things could change.
I was going to say, you were talking about how Sam Darnold deserves another chance. Case Keenum led those guys to the NFC Championship back in 2018, and they pulled the plug on that real quick to get Kirk Cousins, who did not lead them to an NFC Championship. So Vikings, learn from your mistakes, okay? That's what Manish is telling me right now, that they need to obviously re-sign Darnold, because he's the guy if he's going to get you there. The other trade that I want to touch on quickly before we take a quick break, Manish, is Deontay Johnson, who left Pittsburgh in the offseason to go to Carolina, who obviously is struggling massively. Had a little bit of a resurgence when Andy Dalton took over for Bryce Young, who we mentioned earlier in the episode. But they just traded Deontay Johnson from Carolina in that contract he has to the Baltimore Ravens. I'm looking at this for the Ravens perspective, where they had the players that they did last year with Zay Flowers and Odell was there for a little bit. They made their push to the AFC Championship. Does Deontay Johnson do anything, move that needle for you at all in the Baltimore Ravens, or was this kind of an unnecessary move in your eyes?
Well, I think it's a move that clearly indicates to me that they're not particularly happy with Rashad Bateman opposite of Zay Flowers. Zay Flowers will be he's their top wide receiver option in addition to, you know, their two tight ends that they have, and clearly they're a run-based team. They're an explosive offense. They're just not an explosive offense in the traditional passing sense. But they clearly wanted to upgrade from Rashad Bateman. That's how I read this trade. Deontay Johnson is an upgrade from Rashad Bateman. I think from Deontay Johnson's perspective, the good is that you're on a Super Bowl contender. The not so good is that you're not going to get as many targets or opportunities as you did when the Panthers were down by 3 touchdowns and you were getting a lot of opportunities. So from an individual standpoint, statistically, I don't think it helps Deontay Johnson, but I certainly think it helps the Ravens overall, because I do think that Deontay Johnson is a better player than Rashad Bateman and a step up. And I clearly think that Harbaugh believes the same thing, or they wouldn't have pulled the trigger. What's interesting about that deal is that Deontay Johnson's been on the Panthers for half a season, and he was brought in to be Bryce Young's top option, top weapon. And I don't know how it's going to unfold over the last several months in terms of whether Bryce Young's going to hold on to the job or Andy Dalton is going to take over when his thumb gets healthy, after that unfortunate car accident he had. Because if Bryce Young is still the quarterback, I don't know why you just wouldn't keep Deontay Johnson, to be honest with you. Because if you look at the particulars at that deal, the Panthers got a day 3 pick, and they also paid a decent portion of Deontay Johnson's remaining salary. So they gave up a lot in that respect just to get a day 3 pick. And if you actually are still interested in seeing how Bryce Young develops, why wouldn't you have a veteran receiver there to kind of help his growth and help his development? I know they have the rookie Xavier Leggett, which is great, but I would have him opposite of Deontay Johnson. Not having a proven veteran guy there does no favors for your young quarterback, unless, of course, they've already made the decision that Bryce Young is not part of their future.
For sure, and especially it's an interesting move to make where Adam Thielen is also injured for Carolina as well. But we are going to stay on the topic of the Ravens. But before we get to our next point here, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to Between the Tackles. I am here, your host Hogan, with my buddy Manish. We are talking about all things NFL as we always are. I love talking to you, buddy. It's fascinating stuff, especially we're at the halfway point of the season, pretty much. We're through 8 weeks of football, and we're gonna rewind a little bit to last weekend, and we're gonna talk about some of the big games that happened last week that were absolutely fascinating to see. And the biggest one that I want to talk about that really annoyed the crap out of me, because it was one of my picks from last week, was the Browns and the Ravens. Famous Jameis Winston getting the ball, slinging it all over the place, stunning the Ravens. I got to ask you first and foremost, buddy, is this more of a kickstart for the Cleveland Browns, where is Famous Jameis going to lead them somewhere at this point? Or was this just a slip up by the potential Super Bowl favorite, Baltimore Ravens, who can run 1,000 yards down your throat with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson? What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I mean, honestly, Jameis was the most entertaining single player all week, and that probably had very little to do with his play on the field, which was actually exceptional, and more to do with his pregame and postgame speech or postgame interviews. Really like motivating guy. It's funny, his career arc has been so odd, from being a top pick to having great stats in Tampa, but throwing the ball over the field, having a million turnovers, to tearing his ACL, he had a significant knee injury, and then being a backup and now having another opportunity. Is it a flash in the pan and a 1 week, like as you said, like just boost because of what happened with Deshaun Watson? Time will tell, but I think the greater likelihood is that you're going to see the Browns play much closer to the way that they played last year when Joe Flacco was quarterback, because much like I described the Colts having some good weapons, the Browns actually have some good weapons, even though they traded away Amari Cooper. You're seeing Spencer Tillman, their second your wide receiver kind of come into his own these last couple weeks. Elijah Moore, who was a high draft pick for the Jets, has been playing better. You know, he's a quality player, not a star by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, they got Nick Chubb. Njoku's one of the better tight ends when he has a competent quarterback. You saw that last year with Flacco. You know, you're probably going to see that moving forward with Jameis Winston too. So I think the Browns significantly helped their cause by having Jameis Winston at quarterback. Obviously, that was born out of injury, but be that as it may, to me, Winston's a better player right now than Deshaun Watson is. A healthy Deshaun Watson would be, I should say. Now, will there be some rough moments? I think so, because I don't think you can take the interceptions out of Jameis Winston. You know, he did a pretty good job in his first start of the season, but I think you'll have some games where he throws it to the other team, two or three times. That's just kind of how Jameis Winston plays. But it was a boost in the arm. I mean, they're still 2-6. Is it too late to get in the race, in the playoff race? Probably so. But I think they become a more formidable opponent. You know, they've got the Chargers this week, and I think a few weeks ago, if Deshaun Watson were still under center, I would say that's a guaranteed win for the Chargers. Now, I'm not so sure.
Absolutely. That's something to watch going forward with how the Browns continue to respond with, like I said, the 30 for 30 jokes that I love to make with Jameis, where he had that season where he threw 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. I love that stuff. But he is, as you said, he is one of the most entertaining guys in the NFL currently. We're going to move on from that number one overall pick, Jameis Winston, and we're going to move to another one with Kyler Murray and the Cardinals defeating the Dolphins. I enjoyed this one because this is one of my picks in the upset. And like I said, the Cardinals were able to pull it off. But really, so opposed from the game, the discussion I want to have with you at this point is in regards to the NFC West, that division out there where you have the defending NFC champions, the San Francisco 49ers are absolutely in a Super Bowl hangover right now. A lot of that can be attributed to the health of that team, where we have yet to see Christian McCaffrey touch the field. Brandon Ayuk is currently out for the year. Deebo Samuel has been sick. Juwan Jennings has missed a lot of games. They just are, the joke I love to say is they're the walking dead out there sometimes, where you're just putting corpses on the field, it seems like, at this point. But all that being said, they're not out of the division. They're 4-4. They're 500 right now. And so is pretty much every other team in the division. It's 4-4 Seattle, 4-4 San Francisco, 4-4 Arizona. The only one who's not 4-4 are the Rams, and they're 3-4 because they had a bye week. So, Manish, what the hell is going on in the NFC West? Do we have any favorites out there, or is this just going to be a muddled mess by the end of the season?
Well, I don't think any team's going to run away with it. It's not like the Bills, who theoretically could clinch the AFC East by week 11. If they win the next 3 weeks and the other three teams in the division lose their next 3 weeks, then the Bills would actually clinch by week 11, which is remarkable to think about it. But no, you're not going to see that in the NFC West. I can't believe that the Niners are treading water like they have, because you just gave that laundry list of players. Most teams would have just packed it in. When you lose that many players of that caliber this early in the season, the season, typically goes south. But, they are 4-4 in the division. They're 1-2. The only undefeated team in division is Arizona. They're 2-0. And if you look at the four teams, I know the Rams probably not a fair assessment either, because they didn't have Puka and Kupp for, much of this season. But they're getting healthier. So to me, they're a dangerous team, a very dangerous team, if the two receivers can become, can stay healthy. It's interesting because, about a week ago, there were reports that Kupp and Matthew Stafford, which I didn't really believe, but there were reports that some significant pieces would be available before the trade deadline. And I think that, Sean McVay has made it clear now that that's not the case, because they are getting healthier and they are dangerous as long as Matthew Stafford and those receivers stay healthy. What's interesting to me in that division, if you look at the point differential, the Niners are the only team in that division that has outscored their opponents cumulatively. I think they've outscored their opponents by 28. The Cardinals, ironically, have been outscored by 27 points, which is the biggest point differential on the wrong side in that division. So, yeah, it's going to be nip and tuck. It's going to be one in December. No one's going to run away before Thanksgiving in this division. I just think it's fascinating because the Rams of right now are not the Rams of 3 weeks ago. And I think in a few weeks, the 49ers will not be anything close to what they are right now, because in theory, they should have Christian McCaffrey back. And that obviously changes the entire equation for that team.
Absolutely. I mean, the big thing that a lot of people, like you touched on with the Rams, is they didn't have Cooper Kupp and they didn't have Puka Nacua for a long time there. Minnesota was undefeated up until 2 weeks ago, and the Rams actually played a heck of a game against them on that Thursday night, where you saw the immediate response from the Rams team with Kupp and Puka both back in that game. So fascinating stuff to see what's going to happen with the NFC West there. And we're talking about runaways. This is, I love my segue, how I'm able to just naturally do this. Obviously I'm thinking a runaway for offensive rookie of the year. Gotta be Jaden Daniels at this point. And Manish, you know where I'm going with this topic at this point. Did you see that crazy, crazy play that finished off the Washington Chicago game? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, obviously, I mean, you gotta live in a cave if you didn't see it. Yeah, Tyreek Stevenson, not his finest moment. You know what I thought of, actually? I thought of the Bills Jets game earlier this season, right before halftime, when the Bills rushed, I believe, two players and then sent everyone back, and Aaron Rodgers had all day to, you know, stand back there and throw a perfect ball to Alan Lazard. I believe the Bears rushed three guys. You know, I don't understand the logic of not rushing four players. You rush four players, you avoid what we saw, which was, you know, a couple holds. I mean, obviously, they missed some penalties. We all know that. But that notwithstanding, you saw Jaden Daniels have enough time to run all the way to his right and then circle back and run all the way to his left before throwing it up into the end zone. That doesn't happen if you have a four-man rush. I don't understand the benefit or the thinking that there's additional benefit to having that one additional defensive back in the end zone, guarding the long pass, as opposed to having a defensive lineman rushing the passer with three other guys. If you have a four-man pass rush, you don't have all that time. And in all likelihood, you don't have nearly as clean of a ball and probably an incomplete pass or interception. I don't get it. I didn't understand it when Sean McDermott did it to Aaron Rodgers. I didn't understand it when Eberflus did it to Jaden Daniels. That just opens the door up for weird stuff to happen. I know it's easy to say, knock the ball down. Players are conditioned to either catch the ball, trying to catch the ball. It's hard to knock the ball down when the ball is coming from such a high angle. Your only recourse is kind of try to hit the ball forward. And depending on where your body is positioned, like Stevenson's was, it ended up going up and back. So, yeah, I blame Stevenson for, kind of being a knucklehead and not having his head in the game from the minute the ball was snapped. But I think the bigger criticism, I believe, should fall on Eberflus for only rushing three people. And obviously, the big moment that helped set that up, even though the Bears had scored a minute earlier, was about 5 minutes earlier, when there were about six and a half minutes left in that game. The Bears had a first and goal, and for whatever reason, they decided to hand it off to their offensive lineman instead of just turning around, giving it to DeAndre Swift or having Roschon Johnson, their big back, in there. Sometimes head coaches get too cute. They outthink themselves. They think they're so smart, and ultimately it burns them. And I think in a couple of different ways, you saw Eberflus getting burned in that game.
Let's take it easy on the offensive lineman bashing. Okay, that's close to my heart there.
I think they wanted to recreate the refrigerator Perry thing. It was really weird.
I'm thinking. I don't understand it. Where, like you said, it's, unless you're a Dan Campbell, where you're up by 40 points already, rolling screens to that, it's just crazy to do that in such a tight situation that you are already in at that point. But just fascinating stuff. And I couldn't agree more with you. Where I think coaches, especially at the end of games, where if you look at defensive plans, the prevent defense for the life of me has always prevented yourself from wrapping up a game. That's the way I look at it. As goofy and as punny as that sounds, play the defense that got you to the point where you're gonna win the game. And just, I mean, I go back to the Miami miracle with freaking Belichick putting Gronk in the end zone and he didn't have the angle, and I'm gonna piss myself off talking about that. So we're gonna move on from that shenanigans, and we're gonna go from last week, and we're gonna fast forward to the upcoming games that are coming this week. And I want to talk about a few of them that really caught my attention going into this weekend. Apparently, this is just the Ravens podcast today, because obviously all I want to talk about is the Ravens, but they are playing in what could be a very, very good matchup, which is very surprising to say, because their opponent this weekend is the Denver Broncos. Now, why do I say that's surprising? Because Denver obviously looked abysmal to start the season. However, they have a great coach there in Sean Payton, who has been around for a while, knows the game of football, and he is rocking it right now with a first-year quarterback by the name of Bo Nix, who a lot of people did not have on their radars to A, be starting this season, and B, doing as well as he's actually doing to this point. Manish, let's break down this game a little bit, where we know the Ravens, we know what Derrick Henry and Lamar are capable of. We know that they have Zay Flowers, new addition of Deontay Johnson, how much of an impact he'll be will be interesting. We know the Ravens at this point. They are, you know, perennial AFC championship contenders. Denver Broncos, do they have a shot in this game, or are we just, or am I blowing smoke up my own butt?
They have a shot. It's a big line. For the first time in a while, in a matchup between the Broncos and the Ravens, the Ravens don't have the better defense. The Ravens defense is actually their Achilles heel. And we touched on Jameis Winston earlier, and you saw him like throw the ball all over the field. And the Ravens really have had issues on the defensive side this year. And that's why, you know, I wouldn't say that it's out of the realm of possibility or even probability that the Broncos would keep this close and win. And the Broncos, you know, as you touch on, slow start, 0-2. They've won 5 of their last 6. They are 3-1 on the road. So it's not like they're, you know, they're bad away from Mile High. It is a tall order. Bo Nix has done some good things. He's still got a lot of rough edges. I think it's fascinating when you have two great coaches, you know, Sean Payton and John Harbaugh. Payton is the prime example of how a great coach can elevate a team. Because if you talk to most people before the season started, you would have said, okay, Bo Nix, rookie quarterback, rebuilding season for the Broncos. I mean, they're right in the thick of it. I mean, they're right in the thick of the playoff race. They're obviously not going to win the division because there's an undefeated team in the division right now in Kansas City, but they're right in the thick of a wild card hunt. And do I think they can win? I think they can win because I am not impressed at all with the Ravens defense. And even though the names on Denver's offense don't jump off the page, they seem to do just enough. Now, last week, they played the Panthers, take it for what it is. That was actually an interesting dynamic after the game when one of the Panthers players came up to Sean Payton and accused him of running up the score after Payton tried a trick play. I frankly loved Payton's response to that in the post-game press conference. I think Patriots fans can appreciate this because Bill Belichick, I believe, took the same tack. When asked about the thought that he was running up the score, Sean Payton said, well, this is the NFL. You know, if you got a problem with it, you just got to play better. So that's a cutthroat way of looking at it. But I don't think Sean Payton's the only one person that looks at it that way. I just love his attitude. I love what he's done with the organization, turning it around. I don't know if they're going to win. If they were in Denver, I would have picked Denver. The fact that they're on the road, even though they are 3-1 on the road, the Ravens coming off a very disappointing choke job, frankly, in Cleveland. You know, I think that just, from my point of view, makes me want to bet more on the Ravens winning because they came off that tough loss last week.
Interesting you said that. The big thing that you're talking about running up the score is we're going to move on to our next game here. And again, my segue, it's on point today. Running up the score, you look at the Detroit Lions. I think they've scored like 50 points in the last like 3 or 4 weeks. At one point, I think I saw a stat that said that Jared Goff has less incompletions than the Detroit Lions have touchdowns over the last like 4 or 5 weeks at this point, which is just mind-boggling to say the least. The Lions are going up against another pretty good team this weekend by the name of the Green Bay Packers. Now, if you had told me a couple of years ago that the Detroit Lions and Green Bay Packers were going to be a marquee matchup, I would have laughed in your face, told you to get out of here. You don't know football. You don't know anything. Dan Campbell has got the Detroit Lions on that Super Bowl path. Even with the injury to Aiden Hutchinson, the way that he went down, they still look really, really good. Is there a clear-cut favorite in this game for you, Manish? Do you like the Green Bay Packers or do you like the Detroit Lions and why?
I mean, honestly, this is my lock of the week. I actually like the Lions. They're 3.5-point favorites over the Packers. There are a couple elements at play here. One, first and foremost, the most important storyline, is Jordan Love going to play? And he injured his groin early last week. He played for, a couple quarters, 3 quarters before he exited. So I don't believe he's practicing early in the week. We'll see what happens as the week goes on. Obviously, if he doesn't play, Malik Willis replaces him, even though Malik Willis played well earlier this season when he took over for Love. Malik Willis-led team is not going to beat the Detroit Lions. I don't care if it's in Green Bay. So to me, the Lions would absolutely win that game going away. Now, if Jordan Love is actually playing, I still like the Lions by at least a touchdown, to be perfectly honest. The Lions are they're a juggernaut. They're a freight train. They're dropping, as you said, you know, 40, 50 points each week. They can beat you in so many different ways. What I thought was fascinating about last week's 50-plus points against the Titans was that they did virtually nothing through the air. It was all through the ground. You saw the power that David Montgomery has. You saw the speed and the explosiveness that Jahmyr Gibbs had on that 70-yard touchdown run. You saw Sam Laporta come to life. I mean, they have so many different options, so many different weapons. Khalif Raymond, special teams. We probably haven't even thought of different ways that the Lions can beat you, and they'll probably unveil some of that over the next 2 months of the season. They are, to me, clearly the best team in the NFL. They're not the only undefeated team in the NFL. They have one loss to the Rams, and you know the Chiefs are the only undefeated team. I think on a neutral field, there isn't any team that can hang with the Detroit Lions. And even though they're in Green Bay, it's a tough, supposedly tough division matchup. Given the fact that Jordan Love isn't going to be healthy, even if he does play, and he might not play at all because they do have a bye week in week 10. So the Packers might just say, let's shut him down for a couple weeks. Regardless, to me, the Lions are the most explosive, most dangerous team in the NFL. And if you're telling me that I only have to lay 3.5 points, regardless of who they're playing and where they're playing, I'll take the Lions any day of the week right now.
Ooh, okay. I'm feeling good about that. You got your lock of the week there. Okay, I'm going to set you up for that a little bit later on. We're not getting to our picks yet, but we're going to get to them, and I like where your head's at. But we got one more game to talk about before we get to our picks here, and this one isn't as much of a marquee matchup as I would say the Green Bay game and the Detroit game is, but this one's an interesting one in the terms of its number one overall pick versus another number one overall pick. And we touched on the Cardinals a little bit earlier on with Kyler Murray. And, of course, the Bears losing in the fashion they did to Washington last week on that Hail Mary at the end there. The Bears and Cardinals matches up to be an interesting game where there's not really a big line on this. I'm going to check it real quickly. Yeah, Arizona is currently favored by 1 at home. Manish, if you're starting a franchise right now in the NFL and you have your choice between Kyler Murray and Caleb Williams, who are you taking and why?
I'm taking Caleb Williams. I've been a big believer in Caleb Williams for a while. I know he didn't play particularly well for much of the game last week, but prior to that, before their bye, he showed some signs of life. I think he's a smarter processor than Kyler Murray is. Now, Kyler Murray's a pain in the butt. He extends plays with his feet. He can gain yards with his feet. But I think we know what Kyler Murray is now. He's been in the league long enough, and I don't think that we've seen anything close to what Caleb Williams can be. So maybe a little bit of the unknown is attractive to me. But just from a skill standpoint, if you're asking me that if I'm starting a franchise, obviously because of the age, you would also lean toward Caleb. But if they were the same age and you just look at their skill sets, I would take Caleb Williams over Kyler Murray. And in this game, even though the Bears, lost in heartbreaking fashion last weekend, they are on the road. Now, I'm not a big believer in the Cardinals. Jonathan Gannon's now in year two. And last week was the first time since he took over as head coach that they strung together a two-game winning streak. So, asking for 3 in a row from Jonathan Gannon's team, I don't see it happening.
All right, fair enough. Well, you heard it first from Manish. Kyler Murray's a bum. He should just go play Call of Duty professionally. And that's
not saying he's a bum. I just said I'd take Caleb Williams. All things equal. I would take Caleb Williams.
You know me, Manish, at this point. I just love putting words in both you and Burgess's mouths to make you guys look bad when I take advantage of it. That's what I got to do at this point, because we're going to move on to our last and final thing that we love to do here on Between the Tackles. And that, of course, is picking our locks, our games. I got my leaderboard up here, and buddy, I hate to break it to you. You had a pretty good lead on both myself and Burge for a while there.
Yeah,
we're crawling back into this thing. So without further ado, I'm going to run through quickly the updated standings as of right now. Manish, you are on top of the leaderboard at 11-7. And then both Burge and I are right behind you at 10-8 each. So we're wearing the clown mask right now, just because de facto we're tied for last, but this might, it's going to get interesting going into this week. But really quickly, before we get into your picks, I'm going to run through Burge, his last week, what he had and what went wrong for him. And then I'm obviously going to read off his picks for this week since he decided not to join us because he's a bum per usual. But I'm going to take care of him here. Last week, Burgess decided to go with the Cowboys +4, which obviously ended very badly for him with San Francisco destroying the Cowboys. Well, they destroyed him for a bit, and then the Cowboys tried to come back, but not enough for Burgess to kit on that one. He also took the Texans -5, who we touched on in this episode. The Texans haven't been, you know, blowing anybody out. They only won by 3, which was not enough for Burgess to cover on that one. So that's 0-2 there. His one pick that he hit on, he finally went with his gut with the Patriots. And you know what? They did him well. Even though I was sitting there last week saying, you know what? I would take a Jets victory just so you go 0-3. Sadly, it was not to be on that one. But those are Burgess's picks last week that led him to a 1-2 record. And this week, he is going with the Texans +1.5, which you and I talked about, obviously, with the Texans playing the Jets on Thursday night. So we will see how that unfolds for him tomorrow at the time of this recording for us. He's also going with the Commanders -3.5 at New York Giants, where the Giants are coming off that bad loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers the other night there. And then for his final pick, all games we touched on a little bit here, the Los Angeles Chargers. He's taking them -2 against the Browns, which, like you said, is not a surefire bet at this point with famous Jameis slinging the ball around. So there is Burgess's picks this week. I am hoping that he goes 0-3, which, unfortunately, if he does, that means the Jets won. That means the Giants won, who I hate both of those teams so much because of their past with the Patriots there. If the Browns win, meh, that's fine. It is what it is. But Manish, let's move on to yourself here. And of course, I have your picks from last week. We're going to review them. We're going to review them. I know we have to because I put Burgess in the garbage bag. I got to put you in the same aspect where you went 1-2 as well. You could have gone 0-3, but you didn't. So we're going to go over the first one here. And that was, you took the Packers -4.5. They only ended up winning by a field goal against Jacksonville, which was actually kind of a surprising game in all aspects, where I thought Green Bay was going to blow them out the way that you thought, but Jacksonville fought with it there till the end. Your second game there, you win against your team. You took the Bengals -2 going against Philly. Yeah. Hey, Philly showed up and they put you down real quick. I mean, Jalen Hurts he's got a bone to pick with you at this point, I think, because he's like, you know what? I'm going to show Manish we're not going to lose to the Bengals today. And they whooped up on some Bengals booty there. So, but your final pick that paid you dividends there, that was the Bills -3 going against the Seattle Seahawks. The Bills are turning into a scary team right now. A lot of people, I think, don't have them on their radar as much as they probably should at this point, considering they had the bad loss to the Ravens earlier. But the Bills are a dangerous team, and they certainly showed it against Seattle. Now that we went through your 1-2 record from last week, you're still atop the leaderboard, so I have to give credit where it's due. Manish, let's get into your picks this week. Who do you got for me? Who's your lock? What do we got?
All right, well, the lock, as I mentioned a minute ago, Detroit at the Packers. I mean, like I said, if Love's not playing, then it's a no-brainer. Even if Love is playing, you know, Love's been turnover prone. The Lions are opportunistic on defense. And again, they can beat you in a number of different ways. So I'm not going to belabor the point. Lay the 3.5, take the Packers take the Lions to win on the road. The other one, kind of a team that I touched on a little earlier as well. I like the Rams on the road. They're actually, I think, 1.5 favorite in Seattle. Seattle hasn't been playing particularly well. They'll probably get DK Metcalf back, which will be a shot in the arm for their offense. But, J.R. Smith is not, you know, he's thrown up a lot of pass attempts, pass yards, but their offense, there's something disjointed about their offense. Always a tough place to play in Seattle, even though last week, remarkably, there were so many Bills fans there. If you watched the game, you heard them. Obviously Rams fans will not travel even though they're close. So it's going to be a decided typical Seattle home field advantage. But, you know, as I said earlier, as long as Matthew Stafford is healthy, Puka and Cooper, Cup, are on the field, healthy, making plays. Kyron Williams seems to score every week. I like that offense. I like the way they played the other day. Puka to me is a guy we kind of just forgot about. You know, a lot of people maybe thought his rookie season was flukish. He got hurt early. It was on the shelf for a while, but you clearly saw how much Matthew Stafford leans on him and how much of a difference Puka can make. So, you know, I like the Rams to win on the road. You know, it's a division game. Tough to do that, win on the road in a division game. But I like where the Rams are headed. So I'll clearly, you know, be happy to lay the point and a half. The other one is another team that we talked about. Vikings are giving the Joe Flacco-led Colts 5.5. Maybe a little bit bigger of a number than I had hoped. But, you know, the Vikings have, you know, sputtered a little bit recently. And we had touched on that Ram-Viking game the other day earlier in the podcast. What we didn't talk about is that obvious face mask on Sam Darnold that didn't get called that would have extended the drive. I would have been curious to see if the Vikings would have driven down, scored the touchdown, and took a win conversion to go overtime. We got robbed of that as a viewing audience, but they're, you know, they're still a high quality team. As much as I think that the Colts are better right now with Joe Flacco under center than Anthony Richardson, I don't think they have enough to beat, I think, a top three, top four team in the NFL, despite the, you know, these recent hiccups in Minnesota. So I'll gladly give the 5.5 points and look for the Vikings to bounce back and get back on the winning side.
All right. Well, there you have it. We're going to see whether you're right or wrong. And if you get to go 3-0 or 0-3, we'll see what happens. But I'm obviously going to be rooting for you not to go 3-0 because I need to get myself back on top of the leaderboard so I can be as cocky as I was in week one going 3-0 and just smack talking both you and Burge as much as I was.
None of us want that. None of us want that. None of us want that.
But without further ado, let me get into my own picks from last week, where yours truly went 2-1, as opposed to both you and Burge going 1-2. My one bad pick last week was, of course, the Ravens. Again, they just keep coming up in this dang podcast today, but I took them -8.5, which is crazy to look back and see that they were favored by that many points. They unfortunately did me dirty. Famous Jameis smoked me up like that, and it was just, that was a bad pick. So the Ravens were bad for me there. My other two good picks, though, that ended up working out pretty well for me were the Steelers -6.5. That was kind of a back and forth a little bit where I wasn't sure if I was going to hit on the points there, but the Steelers thankfully were able to put it away at the end. Obviously, another questionable call with Daniel Jones going for that 2-point conversion, which saved my bacon there. Obviously, not getting that. Steelers, I think, won by 8 points, so that was a good one for me. And then the last one that we touched on already was the Cardinals were underdogs against the Miami Dolphins with Tua. Cardinals kicked a last-second field goal to win that game. I think it was 28-27 final score, but the Cardinals were +3.5, so that was good for me. So that puts me back into the winning column, which is where I want to be. Now I'm going to get into my picks this week, and honestly, I hadn't really thought about it too much, and I was waiting to hear what yours were. I knew what Burgess's was, but I was like, you know what, let me take a look while Manish is talking right now. And I'm going to rock and roll with the guys that led me well last week, and that, of course, is I'm talking about the Dolphins. But I'm not picking them to win, Manish. I'm picking them to lose to the Buffalo Bills, just to the chagrin of Burgess here, who I know would be rolling around and puking everywhere if he heard me talking like this. But give me the Bills -6 at home against a 2-5 Dolphins team. As much as I'd love to see Tua, you know, put the team back on his back and have an explosive offense again, I think the Bills are just too much to overcome at this point, and I see them winning very, very heavily up there in Buffalo at this point. If it was in Miami, it might be a little bit of a different story, but I think the Buffalo Bills are going to roll. The second game that I'm going to take here is, you know what? I'm finally going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to pick the Panthers, because neither of you guys picked the Panthers. And yeah, I'm going with them. They're 7.5, and I thought about this long and hard, actually, because I was looking at the Saints, and I'm thinking, you know, the Saints, they start off 2-0. They look like a freight train. And then they just, ever since Spencer Rattler came along, they just do not look the same. And I know Derek Carr could potentially come back, but give me the Panthers in an upset at home. Whether they win or not, I'm not going to take them to win, maybe, but I think they're going to keep it closer and not get their doors blown off. Hopefully. This is my Hail Mary. This is my Jaden Daniels throw of the week here, where I'm taking the Panthers +7.5 against the Saints. And then for my final game here, I do like this matchup. I'm going to be fascinated to see who gets it done, but I'm going to rock with the Cardinals again against the Chicago Bears. As much as Caleb Williams, Obviously, like you said, if you were starting a franchise today, you would like to take Caleb Williams. I think Murray has a little bit of something going on with that Arizona team. Marvin Harrison Jr. looks like a great, great addition to that offense down there. James Conner slamming the ball down people's throats the way he has. I know the Bears defense obviously has a little redemption that they want to get after allowing that Hail Mary there at the end, but I think Kyler Murray is going to give them more than they can chew at this point. Give me Arizona minus one. So there you have it. There are the picks for this week. I want to wish you the best of luck, buddy, but I honestly can't wish you the best of luck. I have to be myself at this point, and I got to root for me.
Wish
and
me
hope
the worst
that,
of luck.
That's exactly what I'm doing. You know I'm wishing the worst of luck to our buddy Burgess, wherever he may be at this point. So for all you listeners out there, as always, we appreciate and love all you guys. If you've stuck with us this far, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for supporting us through 50 whole freaking episodes at this point. We hope you enjoy it. We hope you guys like the segments we bring to you every week, and we hope to you stick around for another 50, 100, whatever more we're going to do with this podcast. Just know we love and appreciate all of you. So without further ado, I think that is going to put a wrap on this sucker. Manish, as always, it's a pleasure. Worst of luck to you in your games, but I will talk to you soon.